everybody, and welcome to Glitters of Life podcast. I am your host, Rohit Kokne, and today we have got an exciting episode for you, and we are covering the topic of social anxiety. And for that, we have got a very special guest. She is Mita Mistry, an author of How to Understand and Deal with Social Anxiety, All You Need is Rest, and a podcaster of Healing Place, and a therapist as well. So Mita, welcome on the show. It is a pleasure hosting you.
Thank you so much for having me on, Rohit. It is a pleasure to be here, so thank you.
Such a pleasure to have you, and this is a very interesting topic and an important one as well. And you have been writing a lot about this. I want to know from you, like, if you are about to write another book, I want to get creative with it. So if you're willing to write another book, and you just have to add three emojis to that particular title, which they would be, because then it will show, it will help us to understand what kind of a person you are, what kind of a creative approach you follow for that particular approach. So just to get started, I want to know that, what are your favorite three emojis?
Oh, I love the love heart. The star, you know, the star with the two sort of prongs. I love the star, and I love the sunset. So those are my favorite, kind of love and light.
Amazing to know, because that tells this story that we can just have that particular vibe with respect to what we are reading, what we are moving ahead with. And when we talk about social anxiety, Mita, I have seen that people say that it is not real, but it is a kind of a misconception they have. So is it just real, or like it is just people admitting that they are shy and suck at conversations? Because I have found that socially anxious people may be shy or introverted, but if we compare that again, like the shy and introverted people do not necessarily have social anxiety. So what's your take on to that particular aspect? Because it's so important to understand the deeper crux of it.
Yeah, absolutely. So some people are naturally shy and introverted, and that's absolutely fine. Social anxiety, though, is when you have this intense fear of social situations where you're scared of being judged or being humiliated or rejected. So as a result, what happens is that you start to avoid social situations. You may start to avoid going to work, going to meetings, or you don't speak up in meetings. And what that means is it can actually really affect your life chances, but also it's not very pleasant for the person who is experiencing the social anxiety. Because, you know, if you're about to do a presentation at work and you are so scared because you think, I'm going to fail, I'm going to get it wrong, and my mind's going to go blank, everyone's going to be laughing at me, they're going to see the sweaty patches under my armpits, the chances are you will get all the physical symptoms where your mind will go blank, your mouth will go dry, you will start sweating, and then it becomes like a self-fulfilling prophecy, and you start to then believe that, yeah, I am a loser, I am a failure. Yeah. I can't do these things. And then can you see how it becomes a vicious cycle, which then sort of filters into the rest of your life and different aspects of your life? So it can really limit somebody. So when somebody's got social anxiety disorder, which is quite bad, it really prevents them from even leaving their home in some instances.
Definitely, because we have seen a lot of people dealing with social anxiety these days. Again, the exposure to social media has made a drastic impact on their lives as well. Like consuming more of it again is harmful in some ways. And again, people are willing to vent out there because they find comfort in, like, if someone is acknowledging that particular fact, then they find a good amount of circle out there of the people. So that is something that we have to see again. But what really stems the reason to have that social anxiety, because it's not until and unless that it has been recognized, or I go to a kind of a person or a therapist and they tell me that I have got the social anxiety. So what could be the root causes of it?
Okay, so the root causes are usually some kind of belief system in yourself where you believe that you're not good enough, you're not pretty enough, you feel like you're a failure, you feel you're a loser. And that often stems from some kind of bullying. Maybe it was in your childhood where you were bullied or you were excluded at school, or a teacher or a parent said to you, you will never become something. Nobody's going to marry you. Yeah. Nobody's going to love you. You know, all of these things where we are, as children, when we are raised against unrealistic expectations and standards, which we feel that we cannot meet, we just feel we're not perfect enough. it can stem from that. For some people, social anxiety also runs in the family. So there is some genetic influence there as well. So if there's a history of anxiety disorders or anxiety in the family, it could also then impact you as well. But normally it starts off in childhood when we start to be told that we're not enough. That's where it is, the root is. Yeah.
I feel that we all are enough. It's just that the matter of time that we have to recognize our own skills, because this world is huge. We can achieve each and everything and into our own ways as well. So we don't have to be defined in certain aspects that you have to just follow this particular path and then you'll be able to accomplish that. But during this all course of time, I have seen, like you talked about, like the upbringing as well, the kind of environment that we are living or has been raised into. I've seen that few people are quite studious, few people are just creative and all of that particular thing. So it's more about like people start feeling that I need a kind of an interesting personality. So to not to be get linked with social anxiety as well. So if they lack interesting personality, it doesn't mean that they have got the social anxiety. So it's more about building that particular social confidence is what I have observed. So when we talk about the social confidence, how do you see to this particular aspect? Because once we develop that particular confidence, we are enough bold to take those steps, and that will help to get rid from that anxiety as well. So have you seen this into this context, that social confidence can help you to reduce that social anxiety?
Yeah, absolutely. So social confidence can really help your self-esteem. So people who have anxiety or social anxiety often have very low self-esteem and low self-worth. So they just believe that they actually believe fundamentally in themselves that they're just not good enough. So building your confidence is really, you can only do that by proving your thoughts wrong. So often our thoughts tell us stories which are not true. So going out and socializing and proving your thoughts wrong is a really good thing to do. So that's one of the things that we suggest in therapy, is to slowly take small steps and get yourself out there, maybe go and, you know, join an activity or go to a sports club, just, you know, even purposefully experience rejection. So invite a friend over for coffee when you know they can't come. And if they say no, you know what it feels like to be rejected. So because there's this fear of being rejected, it's better to actually experience that rejection, and that helps to build your confidence. Because then in your mind, because your mind is saying, oh, well, if you get rejected, that is the worst possible thing that could ever happen. But then when you experience it, actually, the world didn't fall apart and you moved on. So slowly, slowly, you have to expose yourself to these situations that you are finding a little bit scary or that you're anxious in, and then you start to prove those thoughts wrong and think, actually, yeah, I can do this.
Definitely. And it's more about like changing those narratives that we created to our own minds. It's more about that developing that particular confidence that even if they don't like, I'm fine with it, because that's the power, that's the kind of a true aura or the freedom that we should be owning. But I've seen that, like Meeta, as you explained, with respect to the social anxiety, I feel that fear is the core of social anxiety. So do you agree to this thing? Because whenever I, even with me, if I have to do new thing or if I have to approach a particular new thing into my own business as well or something into my podcasting journey, I'll be getting anxious. Like, should I be approaching that? Will it be a great step or not? I just think about the results at first place. It's true that we don't have to think about the results in the first place. But then again, that is the kind of a thing, the calculated thing that we try to do. So it's the sense that something embarrassing, deficient or flawed about us will become obvious. And we just go on telling that to everyone that this may not work. So how do you take that particular approach, that fear can stem the social anxiety as well?
Yeah, I mean, fear is a part of it. It's that fear of being rejected and humiliated and the fear of failure. But not all anxiety is bad. Actually, anxiety helps you to perform. So a little bit of anxiety, a little bit of stress can be positive, because what that means is it means that you will do the job thoroughly, diligently. So a little bit of anxiety is okay. It's when it starts to snowball out of control and you don't have control over your thoughts or your feelings, and it's affecting your day-to-day existence, where, you know, it's impacting your relationships and just your ability to get out and about and do things, because it can be so exhausting. If your thoughts are going all the time, that's exhausting. But a little bit of anxiety is okay, as long as you know, well, actually, it's normal to feel a little bit anxious before you do something new. Because yes, your brain wants to protect you from any problems, and it wants to sort of preempt any problems and give you solutions. So a little bit's fine, as long as it's not overtaking your life and preventing you from living healthily and preventing you from sleeping, and it's causing burnouts. That's when it's not good.
Right. We just have to set the right benchmarks as well. So did you feel anxious when you started your own podcast as well?
Oh, God, of course I did. I still do. I'm 6 episodes in and I'm thinking, nobody's listening. No one's going to like it. Yeah, all these thoughts come up because that's normal. And then I take my own advice and say, don't be so ridiculous. That's just your thoughts. It's actually fine. So, yeah, that's a very normal human response.
Exactly. And someone yesterday on Threads posted one kind of a post, like how many episodes you have done with respect to your podcast. And I just counted my number of episodes. It was something around 130 plus or so. And wow. I still felt that I still get anxious. I still feel that I have a lot to improve. And then that is the kind of feeling that we usually get with respect to the anxiety. But again, it shouldn't be overpowering us. That is very important. So when did this thought of writing a book on social anxiety came into your mind? What was the reason? Were there any kind of things that you have seen with respect to your own life, or it was through something that you observed? So what was the thought process behind that?
Okay, so I did actually experience social anxiety as a child. So I was very shy. I would hide under the sofa if we had relatives, and I didn't know what social anxiety was back then. Obviously, I've got over that now and I'm an adult, but I'm also a therapist, and I know what it feels like to be fearful of social situations. And when COVID happened, because we were told to socially distance, I recognized in my clients and just generally, the more and more people were socially anxious because we'd been told to stay apart for 2 years or 3 years. And then all of a sudden, when lockdowns ended, people were frightened to socialize. So everyone's fear levels had exacerbated, but then social anxiety was also on the rise. And I thought, well, I've got through this using mindfulness and confidence boosting. I've done all this work on myself. It only makes sense to help people. And also there's a CBT element that runs through the book. So I practice CBT. I'm a mindfulness-based cognitive therapist and acupuncturist. So I've used those techniques in the book to really help people understand what social anxiety is and that they can help themselves. So it's a book that I wrote, which I wish I would have had when I was younger. So
that is something very truly a great experience. It's not great to experience that social anxiety, but then learning out of it, how to get out of it, and then share that with the people out there is something that one should always do, because it's quite a deeper topic. We take it very lightly and we don't realize the impact that it may have onto our like adult life as well. So that is something that we have to understand. But do you find that people obviously, people don't change often with respect to if they have got the social anxiety, it's very difficult for them to have that particular change. I have read that like when I was doing research for this particular episode, I read many articles, I read a lot about social anxiety as well. And it did talk about like it is changeable thing, but how difficult it is to bring that particular change.
It really depends on the individual. It depends on so many different factors, on what they have been through, what support they have around them at the moment, because resilience and being sort of healing happens in the context of having supportive relationships around you, whether that's a therapist or friend or people you can turn to, a support group. So yes, it very much depends on the individual, but you do have to do some work, which means going inside, going, you know, that journey within and doing some self-development work and really challenging yourself to get out of your comfort zone. So it really depends on how changeable it is, depends on the individual and some of the lifestyle factors around them, but also their willingness to do the work to change.
That is something really important. I would love to highlight that particular word, the willingness, because if we are willing enough, then we can bring that particular change. But again, we need that expert help as well, because it gets a lot easier. And I did read about a kind of a study where it showed that people with social anxiety tend to engage in a restrictive behavior, like the safety behaviors.
Yeah.
So that makes them more less likable. So it's more about underdoing few things or overdoing few things. So how do we change that particular approach of not being that particular likable thing?
So safety behaviors are things like, if say you're out and about, just so that listeners understand, safety behavior would be something like you're in a group of friends or people at work, and then you start scrolling on your phone to avoid that conversation. So that may make you look like you're very rude. You're not listening, you're not giving your full attention, but actually you're using your phone to scroll. So you don't have to engage in a conversation. And so you don't say anything that is going to feel humiliating or embarrassing. Because the other thing with social anxiety is, after the event, people with social anxiety will ruminate. They will think over and over and over all the things that they've done wrong, and believe that everybody was laughing at them or they weren't accepted. So it's recognizing what your safety behaviors are. So in my book, I've written a whole list of safety behaviors, but they can be very individual to a person. So one person's safety behaviors may be different to somebody else's. So the phone is just one example of a safety behavior. So yes, it's really important to recognize, is this a behavior that I have that serves me, or am I doing this to hide from something that I'm afraid of? Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely. Because we try to develop a kind of a different perception about ourselves, like how we are narrating that particular story. So it definitely helps us to understand that what kind of a person we are and how do we have to project ourselves. Because with these kind of people, or like at times, we are a very different person at one end. And again, if we go out there with the people, we try to project ourselves in a very different manner. So it may not be able to, like, at times it may happen that it doesn't match with our identity as well, the kind of personality that we have. But we just have to understand that we are the same people. We are just trying to take an effort to improve ourselves so that we become more likable. And then if we get into that particular group, then it becomes more kind of a comfortable situation for us. So it's more about leaving that particular comfort zone as well. So Meeta, I have seen different cultures affect in a very different way. So you are pretty aware of like how Indian culture works. So with respect to that particular thing, have you seen any kind of a difference between the kind of anxiety people have with respect to different cultures?
Yeah, there's definitely a difference. I mean, obviously I live in England and I'm British. I was born here, but I have an Indian heritage.
Yeah.
So some of the expectations placed on Indians or people from Indian heritage is quite different to the Western culture. We have different expectations. This, you know, performance, attainment at school, the expectation to marry, look a certain way. There's all these expectations. And yes, that does affect your self-worth, because sometimes, you know, I don't know if it's the same in India, but over here, you know, my parents came over to England in the 1960s, and they came with a very Indian mindset where their way of motivating you to do better was to criticize. So whatever you did was never enough. But that's actually detrimental, you see. That generation didn't praise us. Nothing you did was good enough. So you're always working harder, and it's never enough. Whereas with my Western friends and the Western culture here, their parents are just so much more, oh, that's amazing, that's wonderful. They're very quick to praise it. So yes, there are very different approaches, but I don't know, that's just my experience of being a second generation British-born Indian in the UK. So I don't know how it is in India for you.
Definitely, because as you talked about the performance, as you talked about doing something worthwhile, that totally exists. Because see, if you try to tell someone that I have been doing I have the podcast, and so the immediate question will be how much you are earning from it.
Yeah.
So if you don't able if you're not earning, then it's not worth of the activity or the time that you are putting. So each and every person has got their own perceptions, but again, it serves for me as a creative outlet For them, it is just about looking from the money perspective. Mm-hmm. And again, if they have got another job or something like that, and if it name that particular thing, they won't like that because they are enjoying it doing that particular thing. So it's more about that particular thing, and it does exist. So even if you go with your relatives or your friend circle, apart from the core close circle, you'll be able to see these kind of things happening, and it does affect us in certain ways. So if that particular thing happens, like, what would be the way to deal with them? Because I want to know that as well, because we have seen a lot of them coming through us, but we aren't aware of, like, what should be the remedy for that. So what would be your tips on that?
The remedy for
dealing with the kind of objections that people have on us with respect to different, like, the societal and the cultural mm-hmm. differences that we have, and then they try to impose that particular thing.
I think the key thing really is to know your worth. You have to really believe in yourself. If you want to do something creative and you love podcasting, it doesn't matter what other people think. And it's letting go of that judgment and that fear of being judged by other people. It's very liberating, and it gives you such an immense amount of power. I've been through all of that. You know, why are you doing podcasting? Why are you doing changing your career? Just stick with what you believe and really honor who you really are and your gifts, and don't worry. You know, the thing with people, they'll talk, they'll put their opinions on you. They're not living your life. You're the one that has to live your life in your shoes. So you have to decide what makes you happy, what makes your heart sing, and you have to stick with that regardless of what external people are saying. And also not relying on their validation. Learn to validate yourself. Be your own judge and approver. It's a very hard place to get to, but it's possible. Honestly, you can do it.
Definitely. It may happen that at times when you have that particular social anxiety, then it feels like an outsider is looking into your own life as well. And mm-hmm. it is your own narrative. So how did it affect your perception?
Yeah, so I sometimes felt like I didn't fit in. And I think that's because I was traversing two different cultures. So like I said, my parents came with a very Indian mindset. So I'm being expected to be like an Indian girl in India, but I'm living in a Western culture where they do things differently. They wear different clothes. They have different hobbies. So for me, I never really felt like I fit in or belonged anywhere. So you were constantly trying to adapt and change yourself without regard to who you really are. And it's only when I started to tap into who I really am and what matters to me is when things started to change for me. So you're not being swept by these external narratives, and you're not wearing different masks. You're not being something that you're not. So you're not trying to fit a round peg into a square hole or a square peg into a round hole. You are being yourself. And that's what it's really been about for me, is to really learn to be true to yourself.
Yep. So were there any kind of actions that you took? So it's more about, like, you recognize that you know how you have to live your own life, but were there kind of restrictions to that as well? Like, now you have been going on a different path that is not meant for you. So were there any kind of actions that you took and then still kept on doing that particular thing that got rid of you with respect to the social anxiety?
Yeah, so I started to do meditation, and that really helped me go within and understand myself more. And for me, doing meditation felt really calm. It's where there was no external pressure, there was no chaos. And that's when I really started to understand who I am and what I'm about. And that's where I started to draw on my own inner strength. So I think for me, mindfulness and meditation has been a really big thing. It's really helped me throughout the years. And also, it's given me the strength and confidence to live the life that I want to do. So I've had a career change. I went down the whole, go to university, do a degree in business and computer science, management consultancy, you know, brilliant job. And I changed it completely and retrained to be an acupuncturist. I'm a therapist. I've gone into the creative field. So I've gone very much from the head to the heart and doing what I really love. So I've always stayed true to myself. And it was the same with regards to marriage. You know, how, I don't know how it is in India now, but back then, sort of 25 years ago when I was growing up, the expectation was to marry somebody within your religion, your community, whatever. And I didn't. I totally went against that and I married for love. And so I've just 100% stayed true to who I am.
So good to know that, and so amazing that you had that particular career transition, and then you're loving what you're doing right now. That is something that we all must strive for. And you did talk about meditation and mindfulness. So from that particular thing, I can sense that you had a really strong internal dialogue with yourself. So how does that particular thing can change with respect to the anxiety? Because once we are talking with our own selves, we are able to identify any kind of a repetitive thought patterns or like the cognitive distortions that can contribute to the social anxiety as well. So were there any kind of a linkage to that particular internal dialogue as well?
Yeah, definitely. You sort of become an observer of what's going on, and you realize, because when you start to meditate, you know that the present moment is all that you have. Anxiety is only your mind drifting off to the future and telling you stories about the worst case scenario that probably isn't or never going to happen. And once you realize that, and then you can start trapping those thoughts. So I was realizing, yeah, actually all my thoughts are, what if this happens? What if that happens? What if, what if, what if, what if? And I was able to stop that. So the minute a what if thought came up, my mind would be like, no, just breathe. That isn't going to happen, because it never does.
Yeah.
And it's really powerful. It's very simple, but it's very powerful.
That is something that we have to understand, because at times few simple things will offer a better solution than getting into complex situations. That is something that we have to see to it. And I'll be circling back on the thing that you married your love out of religion or something that you were talking about. So when we are talking about more about the norms and the social interactions that may shape our experience with respect to the social anxiety. So what kind of changes you wish to see into that particular domain? Because you did ask me like how different it is in India. I see that things are changing quite drastically. People are now getting that particular liberty, but then again, they have to be mindful of their choices. Mm-hmm. So what are your expectations with respect to those particular things? Like what kind of change you can see into it or would love to see? Because it does really affect the lives of the people, because they are always willing to do something that they love, be it the marriage or be it the kind of profession or whatever they want to achieve into their own domain. So what would be your suggestions on that?
Oh, my suggestions on that. I think just follow your heart and do what's right for you. Obviously, you have to work out what's important to you. So for me, I married somebody not even from the same race, but I wasn't going to do it without my parents' blessing. Yes. So you have to find a compromise. You have to find what you're willing to sacrifice and at what cost. So everything comes with a cost.
Yeah.
So you have to work out for yourself what you are prepared to pay for your happiness, but always choose your happiness. Because remember, it's you're the person that has to live in your skin day in, day out. Not your parents, not your siblings, not your friends, only you. It's always going to be you. So you come into this world alone and you leave alone. So you have to figure out some of these complex things on your own too.
Definitely. And happiness does offer us to the inner peace as well, is what I feel and believe. Because the more we are happier, then we gather that particular courage of doing different things. And when we are talking about the courage, when we are willing to take those particular steps, I feel that there are various biases in the memory. So, when I was reading more about this, I felt that people with social anxiety have hard time remembering the social scenarios that end positively. So is it true? And if it is true, then how we can deal with those moments? Because no one wants to have these kind of moments that they always wish to remember something that has happened positively and something which is exciting as well. So if it doesn't happen, then how we can change those particular situations or moments?
See, our brain loves to protect us and look for problems. So it has a negative bias. So it's always going to find the negative. So even if you've had positive social experiences, your brain is not going to remember that. It's going to remember that one little negative comment that somebody made over the 50 compliments that you received. So what I suggest to people is, and I do it as well, and I've done it all my life, is to keep either a gratitude journal or a pleasant diaries journal where you're noting down all the positive things that happen, all the positive social interactions, the compliments, all of those things. And you can, if you're having a bad day, you can look back and think, well, actually, that's not true. Because I've had all these positive social experiences, all these compliments. This is the what I bring to the world, the impact that I'm having. So this one little mistake or this one negative person is, you can't let that one person, that one negative comment ruin everything. So yeah, it's about keeping it in perspective, but our brain doesn't know how to do that. So a good way to do it is by journaling and writing it down. So then you have it in black and white. So I really strongly recommend anybody who's struggling to write down your positive experiences. And also what you can do is write down some of the negative ones and then scrunch it up on a piece of paper and throw them in the dustbin to say, I'm letting go of this. Because we find it hard to let go. We hold on to so much baggage.
Yeah. Which is not required.
Which is not needed.
Yeah. And again, then I have to get into the practice of journaling. I have been told multiple times that it has got a great experience and it just changes the way you think, the way you process your thoughts. So definitely that is something on my mind. Maybe a kind of a 2024 resolution. But it's starting from February.
That's fine. It's better late than never.
Yep. So, Meeta, we have been connected with this digital world more often. I'm really thankful to the internet because it wouldn't have been possible because of that. Like, if this conversation is happening just because of that. So yeah. It's more about how do you approach with the people. But again, it has impacted in a very different way, the negative way for a lot of people. So how do you try to balance the relationship in the digital world and in the offline world? So what has been your way of living?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have to have social media detox, and every single day I have tech free time. So I'm very strict with my boundaries. I think it's so important to have boundaries. Otherwise it's very easy to be scrolling on your phone and before you know it, half an hour's gone. And the thing with scrolling on the phone is when you're on social media, our brain loves to do the comparison. And you think everyone else is having a wonderful life and you're not. And that's not true because people only share their highlights anyway, mostly. So I would say I personally have really strict boundaries. So every single day I don't have any social media or tech for a few hours. Meal times, there's no phones involved. I don't really use social media a lot. I use it because I have to, because of the work that I do. Personally, I don't really like social media, but I do like it. I have a love-hate relationship with it. I like it because it connects me with people like you. I think it can be a really powerful tool to share positivity and do good work. But like you say, there's also a darker side to it. So we have to manage it. And I think you just have to, I switch off notifications, so I don't have any push notifications on.
Same, yeah.
My phone's on silent most of the time. So yeah, I'm a bit of I just don't contact me unless it's an emergency.
That's something great to know. And again, we are available on emails.
Yes. It's when people start to WhatsApp me, I'm thinking, oh, that's too close. Can we take this to email now? I only give WhatsApp to my very close friends and family.
That is something that in a way we have to balance it. But again, there is a disclaimer that you have to watch our podcast, our content in full, and then you have to log out from.
Absolutely. Some content is really positive and soul nourishing. And this is one of them. So, and that's what I try to put out there on social media. So I use my social media a service media, not social media or ego media. It's not to feed my ego. It's there to serve people. So
definitely it's more about like how we are delivering that particular positive message out there. And we don't care about like how many people it is going out there. It is more about like in what way it will change their life. What way it will change their perception and thought process as well. So that is something, the agenda that we carry. And it is obviously good to have that kind of a balanced approach to it, because anything that we overdo, it has got negative impacts as well. So I'm loving this conversation, Meeta. It has been such an honor. And when we are talking more about this particular topic, social anxiety, it has got mental health implications as well. So what kind of implications you have seen? And did it ever happen that when you were dealing with the social anxiety in your own life, you thought that this isn't a flaw, but it is my unique part of the story, and I'll navigate through it in a very, and I'll be crafting something great out of it. So would love to know that particular part of your journey.
Yeah, absolutely. I very much believe that, you know, things happen for a reason. And I think the mindfulness and the meditation helped me to understand that. Obviously, that's not the case for everybody. But for me, it was, well, this is a part of who I am. It's not good. It's not bad. It's just there's a reason for it. And now I know what that reason is. So it's led me to create a book and help people. I think in terms of its mental health impact, for me, social anxiety wasn't so severe. There's obviously a spectrum. So I wasn't on the sort of worst end of the spectrum. So for some people, they might need medication to help calm their nerves or antidepressants. I didn't have to go down that route, thankfully, but there's no shame if you have to. So for me, yeah, I think it's really been a bit of a journey to understand myself better and to really help people as well, and to give that hope that actually there is a way out. And yeah, just keep going and don't worry, but just talk to somebody as well. It's really important. When I was dealing with social anxiety, it wasn't a thing. Nobody talked about mental health, and it would have been seen as, oh, you're weak. But actually, no, it's a strength to recognize it. It's very, the world is a different place now. We're a lot more aware of mental health issues, and there's a lot more support out there as well. So all I would say is, with something like social anxiety, is a spectrum. Some people might just feel shy. Some people might just be introverted. Some people might be on the very sort of extreme end where they actually are so scared to leave the house. So it's just understanding how it sits with you and finding the right support and reaching out. The most important thing with anything like this, or with any mental health issue, is to recognize and be honest with yourself and say, you know what, this doesn't feel right, and I need to tell somebody, and I just need some support, and I'll get the help and I will get through it. Because there's always a solution.
Yeah, there's always a solution. You just have to see that whichever fits best for you, you have to opt for that. But Meeta, after having this discussion around this particular topic, is it possible to eliminate the root cause of social anxiety? That remains a question to be answered, because we may be trying different ways of getting dealing with it, or like mitigating its impact on our life. You have lived that particular life as well. I feel that you have totally eliminated that. But does it happen that it can come back again into that same format? And if that happens, like, is there a way out to eliminate the root cause of it?
Yeah, definitely. You can get to the root cause of it. And the root cause requires working with a therapist, I would say. I mean, in my book, and actually I've got a third book coming out in May, which is called The Social Anxiety Workbook, which is like a therapist that's with you. So we go through all the exercises that you would do if you were coming to see me. And you're really doing some deep inner work where you're reflecting on your values, your belief system, and we start to reframe them. So once you reframe your beliefs, so social anxiety has its roots deep, it's deeply rooted in your belief system. But it's very hard to get to that belief system on your own. It requires a lot of deep work. Your belief system triggers your thoughts. You can't just necessarily stop those thoughts that come up. It's a process. And first of all, you have to change the underlying belief system and reframe that, which will then start to reframe your thoughts. So it is a bit of a process, but it is possible. Yeah, so yes, you get to the root cause, which is your belief system. It could be some things in your environment. Maybe you need to change career. Maybe you need to have a new friend circle. Friends who are more supportive rather than, dismissive, or places where you don't feel seen or heard or validated, where people are just putting you down. You need to remove yourself from those toxic environments as well.
So it's more about having that particular proactive approach to this particular topic. It's very deep to understand that it does exist. You can just get into a kind of a groove that you can be able to get rid of it by working on to your own shortfalls as well. But you need the expert help as well. So that is something that we have to understand. And again, wishing you the best for your third book that is coming. So it will be helping a lot of people out there. And now coming on to the last part of this episode, we have been talking on Glitters of Life podcast. So the main aim of this particular podcast is adding glittering gems to each and everyone's life. So it is more about like to realize our potential, how great we can do in our life, how brightly we can shine. So when you just hear the word glitters of life, how do you feel? How do you define that particular thing?
Ooh, for me, a glitter of life is just loads of energy, passion, nature, sunshine, just light, you know, but going back to the emojis,
yeah,
love and light for me, you know, it's all about positivity and tapping into your strengths. And because we all have them, even on those bad days when you think, oh my God, glitter of life is just, there's so many. I could go on and on.
Yes, definitely. And it's so good to have those different perspectives of that particular word, because for me, this word came into my mind somehow. Like I didn't search on internet or something like that. I felt connected with this word. I went ahead with it. So that is something that I always love about like when people define it. And as you said, like you define it really well. So thank you so much for that. And Meeta, it has been such a lovely conversation with you.
I could learn
a lot through this particular topic, because for me, it was more about like how I can educate people around this topic, how they can navigate such situations, and whatever key takeaways we have discussed, they can surely implement those particular things into their own lives, because it gives them the kind of clarity they are willing to have in their life. Because it is very hard to go out there and say out that, I have got social anxiety, and people will start dismissing them. People will run away from them. So it is more about that particular effort. So thank you so much for being on the show. And it has been a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you so much for having me on. I love this conversation. And I hope people just take one thing away from it. So thank you.
Definitely. And if anyone would love to connect with Meeta, I'll put out her website and the email into the episode description. You can surely reach out to her and have a conversation. And I wish you all the best with your future endeavors, Meeta. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for a hit. Likewise.
Stay happy, stay healthy. Bye-bye. Take care.
Take care. Bye-bye.